Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode is sponsored by R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice, a welcome addition to anyone's sleep routine. Pace Case, if you know me, and you do, you know that I'm working all hours of the day, all hours of the night. So the sleep that I do get has to be very good sleep. And I'm always looking for ways to up my sleep routine. Sometimes I'll read a book to go to sleep. Sometimes
The Bachelor?
That book keeps me very awake. It's very engaging. That never puts me to sleep. I will sometimes just put down my cell phone after a long day of looking at a screen. It's nice to get some time away from the screen. I also will incorporate some R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice. It truly makes you go to sleep a little easier. It's the thing you need to help you drift off into the dreamland.
As more and more people are looking to prioritize sleep, Organic Just Tart Cherry is having a moment thanks to Tart Cherry's potential sleep-related benefits and potential to aid in muscle recovery when you get those gains like clues. We're seeing this in the viral Sleepy Girl Mocktail trend on social media. R.W. Knudsen has a whole lineup of natural juices with zero added sugar, so you can feel good about adding them to your wellness routine. It's all about celebrating those daily wins. Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice is made from tart cherries, which may help you get a better night's sleep because they have natural melatonin.
R.W. Knudsen crushes only 100% real ingredients, so you can crush everything you do. Pick up a bottle at your local grocery store today.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Bachelor Clues, flying the ship solo once again. Pace Case is on vacation, and Dark Seeker is under the weather. So well wishes go out to Dark Seeker. We hope that you rest up. We hope that you get better. But this is Twibbon, and I'm going to have all that news for you. I'm going to have those gains for you. I'm going to have those parasocial plays for you. I'm going to have those screams from the bit for you. And I'm going to have a very special state of the game. I got two fantastic guests joining me on today's program to talk about where we're at as a fandom and to talk about aliens. So if that's of interest to you, and it should be at this point, stay tuned for that. But before I get to any of that, I do want to mention that Courtney Robertson has a new episode out today with Amy Bean, who is one of her best friends, who is also a player back in the old days of The Bachelor that turned into a producer of the show. So she has some very interesting perspectives from both sides of the camera. And I also just wanted to mention that Grace Ann's show Grafting, which covers Love Island, is going to be continuing to cover Love Island USA even after the UK show comes to a conclusion next week. So be sure to stay tuned for that if you're a Love Island fan. And now let's get into the meat of our program. As I said, we have a very interesting state of the game. Two fantastic guests. Can't thank them enough for joining me. So here it is.
Game of Roses. State of the game.
Today, I am joined by two incredible guests, two very special guests. I'm humbled. I am honored. We have the Bachelor Season 18 FIMP recipient and co-host of the Dear Shandy podcast. And we have fellow t-shirt uniform enthusiast and co-host of the Dear Shandy podcast. Of course, I'm talking about Charlene Joint and Andy Levine. Thank you for joining me for State of the Game.
Thank you for having us, Clues. It's always an honor.
Okay. Well, look, what we usually do on State of the Game is we talk about where we are as a fandom and what is the state of the current franchise. Take into account everything that has been happening recently. So I want to ask you guys a few questions. I want to start off with the big one. What do you think has been the impact of Mike Fleiss being ousted from the franchise on the current season?
Ooh, is it wrong to say no impact?
Interesting. No, not at all. Please. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, if he has been involved in terms of, you know, marionette choices, the puppeteering of the show, I haven't noticed any difference. It feels like they've been using the same old handbook and
Interesting.
The same old tricks, personally. Yeah.
I was actually looking for some change, and I didn't notice it.
Why? Do you think there has been a change?
Well, I think the first massive change was Charity Lawson. That was not his choice for Bachelorette. He had a very different choice, and I think it kind of came to blows, and that was one of the final things that kind of pushed it over the limit for Warner Brothers, NZK, potentially even ABC, to say, we got to get this fucking guy out of here.
Do you know who his choice was? I'm just curious.
Yes, I do, but I cannot say. I'll just say that he was fighting very hard for a different bachelorette who was not diverse, shall we say. And I think that kind of got lumped into the overall decision, along with all the other stuff that was coming out about his various behaviors behind the scenes over the courses of the past seasons. But okay, so you don't feel any difference in the show this season?
Well, aside from the choice, that aside, I mean, who the Bachelorette is, I haven't noticed anything as far as the structure or the sort of the plot tropes.
No, I haven't either. I mean, maybe slight things like cutting two episodes from a season.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of anything else. Nothing's really struck me. And I even find the choice of Charity, if that had been a choice made with him at the helm, I don't know if I would have thought that was
right.
Out of the ordinary either.
This is just kind of my take on it has been, A, structurally, there are massive changes. We've had every episode this season end with a rose ceremony. That is not usual in recent seasons. They cut it into cliffhangers. They don't give you a rose ceremony at the end of every episode. So you narratively, you're left feeling unsatisfied, at least through the course of like almost all the bubble seasons, that was the case. You'd have two or three episodes in the middle of the season with no rose ceremony at the end.
But have you not found that in recent, like the last just few, they have sort of tried to get back to that ending with the rose ceremony, or am I just off?
Yeah, I think with Zach Shawcross's season, they did try a real effort to get back to basics, to go back to what they thought has worked, you know, since basically the classic era, seasons 1, 2, and 3. But that said, I also feel like there's a massive shift in how they presented their villain this season, Braden Bowers. Usually, in these most recent seasons, if you get presented as a villain, you're immediately morally judged as a terrible piece of shit person, and people start sending you death threats. I'm thinking mainly about like Brendan Morais, Piper James in BIP season 7. I'm thinking about any of the moralistic villains that they had over the course of the past, you know, however many. You look at like Yosef Aburodi in Bachelorette 16. Mm-hmm. That guy was positioned as just like an evil man.
Yeah.
Braden is positioned not only as not evil, he wins the FIMP. He is somebody who is potentially dateable, and they made him fun. He was like a fun villain, which we haven't seen in years, I feel like.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm not sure if that's their positioning or if that's just the audience more so wising up to that, to what's being presented to us in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, we don't see what's on the cutting floor. Who knows? Maybe Aaron B. was a horrible villain. We have no idea. But
right.
I think Braden should get the credit for the way his edit looks, because I think Braden's
totally
a complicated guy. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think, would I like to be roommates with Braden for like 3 or 4 years? No. That being said,
okay.
That being said, which negates everything before, according to Larry David.
Yeah. Right?
I think they made every effort they could to portray him as the Bachelorette villain, but I don't think he allowed it to go as far as they wanted it to go. I'm not 100% sure I agree with you.
Yeah, same. But I mean, I love a good debate. Yeah, because I feel like we've been fed a pretty heavy-handed villain edit with Brayden, but it was like he was the best they had. It reminds me a bit of like an Olivia Caridi, where it's like her biggest crime was rubbing other people the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And then you show, you know, a shot of her talking about her cankles when his family friend just died and suddenly she's a horrible person.
Yeah.
And you get rid of all the context. It reminded me a bit of that, where you have a lot of the music and you don't have much context to work with. And pretty quickly, you have a villain for like at least 3 or 4 episodes. And I just think that people are different. The viewer is different than from Ben Higgins' season. You know, people now are like, but actually what Brayden's saying doesn't not make sense.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to bring up. Brayden, I think, is one of the most dynamic players that I've seen on Bachelorette anyway in a very long time, because the manner of his villainy was couched in just rational thought. This is a crazy fucking process. All you guys coming in here saying you're ready to get married by seeing her once, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is real. I want to suss this out. I want to see if I can build emotional connection with her. And by couching his, like, what would traditionally be, and even what was presented in this season as a for the wrong reasons kind of attack by Aaron B., it loses steam. His attack doesn't have the same power that it would in a prior season, because I think Brayden was a strong enough player to make it believable that indeed he was just trying to figure things out. And it's this is a crazy situation. How do you guys not see that? That said, Brayden was also doing some of the most bombastic outfit play we've ever seen. Full earrings in every scene, giant scarves, the group date where he has a walking stick that I think he just found in nature. It was like, fuck it, I'm gonna use this stick.
No argument there. He wins.
Bombastic, great word. We missed your vocabulary clues.
I was trying to think of the one thing he didn't do, and I think it was a beret.
I was waiting for something like that too. A crazy hat. I was like, where's his fucking crazy hat? He has to have one. He must have brought it. Let's talk real quick about the ratings. Have you guys been keeping track of that?
Yes, I'm the numbers guy. And I did notice that the premiere was abysmal.
It was the lowest rated premiere, but that is on a steady trajectory of all network television shows just shitting the bed season after season. The numbers have gone down, just generally speaking, across the board on all network TV. And the Bachelor franchise suffers from that too. But comparatively speaking, the Bachelor still does pretty well. It usually wins its time slot. It usually wins its night. But generally speaking, over the course of the last infinity, all Bachelor seasons taper off in the ratings, and then they come back in the playoffs in like hometowns, fantasy suites, and into the finale. Mm-hmm. They'll tip back up. But usually the premiere episode has the biggest ratings, and then the finale either has the only ratings that beat it or are comparable. This season, what we just have seen, because I believe the switch back to the time slot, its original time slot at 8, 7 Central, was instrumental in this. Charity just got her biggest rating of the season this week.
Oh, really?
That's not super surprising. I mean, we've seen in our own comments, people don't want to stay up till 11. They don't care that much.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree, which is brings me to my next topic. What do you think of Golden Bachelor, especially that it's going to be airing at like 10 p.m. or some shit?
Oh, it is? Why? Wait, that's a terrible call.
That's ABC.
The demo goes to sleep at 7.
Okay, how dare you? Now you're going to be giving mean DMs. I feel like I'm approaching the demo, to be honest.
Dinner's at 4, bedtime's at 7. Yeah, we're getting there.
We're super excited. I actually think that this is the most brilliant move the franchise has made in years. Yeah. What do you think?
No, I agree. I couldn't be more excited for it. I know there's some controversy going on right now with Nick Viall putting out on the Viall file some kind of... Somebody said they got a DM from somebody they don't know. Nothing can be corroborated. There is no vetting going on here. But the idea they're promoting on the Viall files is that this guy was potentially having an affair on his wife as she was in her final days. So we'll see if that susses out. I am in no way promoting this idea. I have no proof of this. This is just what Viall said on Viall, or what one of Viall's producers said on Viall files. But in terms of The Golden Bachelor, there are multiple other production companies making shows that are similar right now. And I think Bachelor's going to beat them out of the gate. So that's good. They will establish the pattern. But if this show does well, we are potentially looking at a Golden Bachelorette maybe next year.
Wow.
What would that be like?
Oh, I would watch the shit out of that.
I mean, that'd be amazing.
I know. I can't wait.
I really hope you know, this trend, and I guess they've been sort of coming off it. Actually, they kind of did it with, no, they didn't do it with Zach so much, but this trend of sort of turning against their own lead. I just can't imagine they would do that with their golden leads. And so just right off the bat, I have more of a warm, fuzzy feeling going into it.
Yeah. I would kind of like to see a senior league villain as the lead.
Well, there has to be one.
No, I want the lead. I want them to make the lead the villain.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Pull a Juan Pablo.
Yeah.
They'll call him back once he hits 65. No, I think there will probably be villains too. I don't think they're going to, Lizzie and I have talked about this for hours, like off the podcast, just like between ourselves. What is that show going to be? Is it going to be traditionally very similar to The Bachelor? Are we going to have villains? Are we going to have weird forced nudity group dates? Is that going to happen in The Golden Bachelor, forced violence group dates? Are they going to be playing tackle football on an NFL field while Ben Roethlisberger tries to hug them all?
They're going to bring back the spelling bee.
Yeah.
Mark my words.
Are they maybe bingo? Okay, I mean,
bingo. I think there's going to be forced nudity. I think they're going to have these women getting in bikinis or doing some kind of model shoot. I think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
As long as they're comfortable.
Yeah. I mean,
who is though in that situation? Even the regular aged players or the age that we're used to, you know, the 20s to 30s players.
I feel like more.
I'm not saying that in a, oh, I don't think women that age want to be seen in their swimsuits. I'm saying that in general, like being seen in your swimsuit on TV. I almost cried when I was first told to put on a swimsuit. Yeah. So,
well, is it more offensive to make young women put on swimsuits or old women put on swimsuits?
I feel equally offensive. I'm just saying I don't think they will drop that strategy just because these are golden era players. You know,
yeah.
I think
you're right.
Do it again.
I mean, you are right. They're definitely going to want them to squirm, however they can get them to squirm.
I think they're going to keep the format. If I know this franchise, they're going to keep the format extremely close to what's happening now.
Yes. Yeah.
Except they're going to throw in a lot of tongue-in-cheek old people things.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Just basically, it's going to be like the same exact thing, and you're just adding a layer of old.
Mm. Yeah. We have a thing that we have identified that happens in late stage. It just happened in this past episode in charity season that we call the COTA, the Ceremony of the Ancients. And this is when usually on a one-on-one date, usually in international travel, the bachelor or bachelorette and whoever they're on a one-on-one with encounter two old people who have been married for like 40 years and they tell them the secret to everlasting love. How are they going to do that in The Golden Bachelor? How old will the Ceremony of Ancients have to be in that season?
Wait, so this is new. COTA is new, right?
I don't know how long we've been saying that. A couple
was
years.
It in the book?
I believe it's in the book. Yeah, I think it is in there.
It is? Oh, sorry. Okay, I did read it.
No, please. You don't have the book memorized? The 700 term glossary? How dare
you? The glossary was the most challenging part, I will admit.
So do you know what the age range of the contestants is going to be? The cast?
Okay. This is something that we talk about off the show as well for hours. Like, are they going to have somebody in this show that, like, what's the lowest age? 35?
Well, what's the math? You divide, you multiply the age by two, then subtract. You must know that.
No, divide in half and then add 7.
Is that, okay, that's what
it
is.
Yeah, but I feel like when you get up to 71, like that, it's not okay.
So it's like 40. So you sure?
Well, I think the general rule is as long as you divide your age in half, and then add 7, it's supposed to be acceptable,
so
but I don't know if that's true.
Is he 71? 71, right?
Yeah, 71.
So let's say 36. Let's give him 36 plus 7. That's 43.
No, that's too big. That's too big.
Too much. Yeah?
You think that there will be nobody under 40?
Oh, under 40. Oh, wow. That's bold.
I think they're going to have some 30-year-olds. I think there may be somebody in their 20s on this show.
No.
I think so.
Wait, you have inside information on that, or are you just thinking?
I don't. This is just my own, like, if I'm the Bachelor franchise, if I'm the producers constructing this, what is my real goal with this show? I want eyeballs on it for sure. And that young player in her 20s may not last long, but just the fact that she's in the player pool will be news. That will be an article across every outlet, you know?
I agree with you. I agree that that's definitely something they're thinking about, but how offensive would it be if the connection with that 20-year-old clearly was meaningless and he just kept going for her every rose ceremony?
I don't think they'd let it happen.
That's The Bachelor and Bachelorette. That's the whole show. Okay. All the connections are meaningless except like one or two. They have to pretend. I mean, shit, we saw in this last episode with Charity when she was dumping Sean, when he came to do the knock knock and she dumped him, she literally never looked him in the eye. The whole reason he was on that show is because the producers are like, you have to act like you like him. We need to keep him around for a couple more episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way every Bachelor or Bachelorette works, you know?
My favorite part was when she had her head in her hands and she was like, it's time.
She just fucking cut him off. Yeah. It's time. You need to be walked out now. I'm through with this.
We're behind schedule.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. Do you track the social media numbers of players, generally speaking, over the course of a season? Are you aware of them?
I'm aware of how low they are.
Yeah.
Like, in general. So amazed by, I look at Brayden after he got released and self-released. And he was at like, he was barely above me. It was like 8,000 and change. And it's just amazing. Like 10 years ago, or not 10 years ago, like 7 years ago, he would have been at 100,000. No question.
Not even seven. I mean, you look back at 2020 was, or let's even go 2019, I guess. You've got Bachelor season 24. That was pilot Pete Weber. Mm. And you had, I mean, how many 1 million club players were in that season?
Unbelievable.
So many.
Yeah.
All the top four. Yeah. And I think even a couple after that bubbled up into it. And then prior to that, you had season 23 that was like every fucking player on that season was basically in the million club. Just massive amounts of followers. People like Demi Burnett coming off that in, I believe she got sixth place that season. Had way over a million followers for a while. Still has retained. I believe she's at 930 something K currently.
I love that you know that.
He's amazing.
What's that?
I love that you know that. Like, you do you have a sheet in front of you?
No,
like a
he has
sort
it
of
all
spreadsheet?
Up here.
You have no idea. The other night, well, I have to save this. This is my scream from the pit later, but let's just say I was just kind of flipping through and I looked at Demi Burnett's Instagram account and I was like, I have to know what her first post is. I have to know what her first actual, like the first post. She scrubbed her Instagram account, but I have to know what the first post is. And I scrolled. And all I will say is in this segment, it was very interesting, but I will talk about it on my screen from the pit later. And I'll tell you guys when we get off this, what it was, because it's interesting.
I'm just curious, when you say I have to know, like what's the thought process there where you're like your curiosity is just overwhelming?
Yeah, because especially for somebody who becomes a professional influencer, I'm very, especially somebody like Demi, who's incredibly curated. Like every image on her grid is like exactly what she wants you to see. Where does she begin that? What is, at least in terms of her parasocial identity, when does it begin? What is the first thing? What is the genesis of it?
Yeah.
And because she's deleted or archived a bunch of posts, obviously, that happened before Bachelor. Mm-hmm. And so I was just curious. And then it led me down a darker hole where I started doing it with a bunch of different high-profile Bachelor players. It's interesting. It's an interesting exercise.
So you asked the question, but what are you getting at? What are you asked us the question about social media.
Yeah, why? I was getting at the low numbers. And why do you think that is? Because we see plenty of other games. Love is Blind, Love Island, all these other dating formats. Millions of followers for the big players off those shows. Nobody's hitting that. Even Charity is in the low hundreds of thousands.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's nuts, actually.
I mean, doesn't that mean that the popularity is waning
for
the show?
It means Instagram is also waning.
But Instagram for Love is Blind is not waning.
Yeah.
I think that there's a level of investment that just doesn't exist with this particular show anymore. You'll still have maybe those core people, but I just feel like people always watch this show with one foot out the door now.
Well, is it possible that the demo for The Bachelor is now different than the demo for these other
Maybe
shows?
Maybe they've aged out of
they've
it.
They've aged out. So the people watching The Bachelor on average are not really Instagram-y.
Yeah, like, that could be. I personally think that it also has something to do with the producers taking a very hardline stance against social media in the product itself. There are multiple narratives about people even mentioning Instagram or like last season. I forget the name of the player, but she was accused of telling other players, oh, you're going to get 50,000 Instagram.
Anastasia?
Yes, Anastasia. Mm. So that becomes the basis for her villain edit, is the idea that she even understands Instagram or knows how to get 50,000 followers. And so as a viewer, if you're watching the show, this is getting baked right into your head. Instagram is bad. It is against the premise of the show. It's against love. And so I think that seeps in and it makes you less likely to engage with Instagram.
Really? So you think they've brainwashed the viewers to hate Instagram?
Yes. And I think that it started with probably Brennan Marais and Piper James in BIP season 7, because you saw both of those players come into that game. I believe she came into that game with 80,000 and he came into the game with 100 and something, because he had made it far, I believe, third place in the prior season of Bachelorette. Once he came into Paradise, he had over 200K, I believe, and she was poised to crack 100. They got embroiled in this thing where they were accused. I don't know if you watched that season.
Oh, we saw it. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you know the basis of it. But part of that was that they were openly talking about Instagram followers, and they were vilified for that in a way, and even demonized in a way that we had never really seen. And instantaneously, this is within like a 48-hour period of that edit coming out and them getting kicked off the beach by grocery store Joe. Mm-hmm. Within 48 hours, he lost over 80 to 90,000 Instagram followers, and all of his brand deals dried up. Like immediately, they just yanked all of his shit.
Yikes.
So they fucked him professionally. But I think what it did to the audience was convey that these people are fucking evil. They've come in here to infiltrate our show. All they care about is Instagram. And I think it like tainted the idea of Instagram for the audience a little bit. Huh. And they continue to reinforce that.
That's just frustrating, though, because if you think just even slightly critically about that, then you'd be like, well, then why didn't the powers that be let Piper come in right away so they could just start dating each other? You know, it's like the whole thing that made it evil was the fact that Natasha was strung along.
Yeah.
Supposedly. And she was strung along because they had Piper waiting in a hotel room.
Exactly. And then they gave Natasha a rose and even promoted that she got an extra 100,000 Instagram followers at the end. They put a Chiron on the fucking screen having her pop champagne and be like, oh, she hit 400K. It just doesn't make any sense.
There's a lot of hypocrisy.
I mean, maybe it's possible that the more engaging characters, the characters that people are drawn to on Instagram, are on other shows. Like maybe they have more latitude to show their personality. You know, The Bachelor does kind of cubbyhole their characters a little bit.
No, I think there's a lot to that. If you watch A Love is Blind, I feel like you get so many more dimensions of a single person than you do on this show.
Absolutely. And you get more villains. Like there are more villains on other shows.
Yeah, but they're all more nuanced.
They're nuanced.
Most of them. Yeah. We watched our first Love is Blind season. We recapped. It was our first time branching out.
The most recent one?
Yeah, season 4. Yeah. And it was our first time. It was by popular request. I'm sure you also recap it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I literally watch it and then put my head in a little video watching it, and that's on our Patreon. And I pause and zoom in on good face plays and all that kind of stuff.
Wait, your own face plays?
The face plays are the players. I usually try to get about like a face play of the game, or like if something interesting visually is happening. I really like to deconstruct how these shows are directed, how their set designs are done. Like every piece of what they're giving you visually has some part of why you like it or don't, or what they're trying to convey or what they're not.
I think your own face plays would also do well on your Patreon. Yeah. Personally, you give good face.
You give good face.
I'll take that under advice.
So was it like, is it like mystery? Was it called Mystery Theater 3000? You'll know that reference.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I guess it's more akin to like a YouTube watch along or whatever. But you guys watched season 4, and what did you think of it? This is your first time seeing it. And did you watch also the finale, the live, in quotes, live finale?
Yes.
Yes, but we watched it behind, because we didn't start recapping until after Zach's season was done. So that put us behind.
Yeah.
But we kind of got into it. It took a while, though. Like the pods was pretty grueling to recap.
Yeah, the pods
was nodding knowingly right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that game format has some weak points for sure. The pods are, I mean, once you start to understand how that show is produced, there are multiple relationships that happen in the pods, multiple people that get engaged that you never see, that they cut
nuts.
Completely out of the show. And it's like, well, I would like to at least understand what's going on there potentially. So I don't really understand what their basis is of who they choose to kind of like follow to the next round and get to go to the fantasy suite round and all that. But I also think there's a dead spot in it once you have the engagements happening. After all the couples come together and they meet face to face for the first time, there's a lot of drama there with love triangles and getting to see the person that you were going to propose to or whatever. But then once they go into that phase of like, well, there's 4 days until the engagements, and now it's they're just like trying to drum up cold feet scenarios basically for all the players, none of which makes sense. I think they need some other game mechanic in that phase to really amp it up. But
I agree.
Overall, I like that show a lot.
Yeah. Once they got out of the pods, I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Both of us.
We got into it. And just there were characters like Tiffany. I just fell in love with Tiffany. Yeah. I feel like we saw so many sides of her that I think even if she were the bachelorette, let's say she were the lead, we still wouldn't have gotten to know her as well as we got to know Tiffany on that show.
Of course. I mean, that show allows their players to have open conversations about abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, you're never going to see that in The Bachelor. The closest thing that I think The Bachelor has ever come to something like that was probably the conversation with Tayshia Adams and Ivan Hall in Bachelorette season 16.
Yes! About, a famous conversation.
Yeah, very famous. And obviously it was like timely. All the George Floyd protests were going on around that time. And so it made sense to have it in the show. But just a regular conversation that, especially two people in that scenario, like, of course you have to talk about abortion. If you're about to marry somebody, you want to know their attitudes on this, if they may differ from yours. But like you're put under the idea that in The Bachelor, like, they don't ever talk about that.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
That's insane. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Because it doesn't exist because you all want as many kids as possible.
That's right.
That too, yeah.
That's all you want. To get married and make babies.
That's all that's important. It's the Stepford Wives. Stepford Wives Nation.
So let me ask you this. You guys are obviously world famous podcasters of your own Bachelor Nation podcast. What do you think about what has happened in the recent months with the shakeup at Bachelor Happy Hour with Grocery Store Joe and Serena Pitt, now the new hosts ousting Becca Kufrin and Michelle Young, and then the death, I guess, of clickbait?
Yeah, to be honest, Andrew's just laughing.
You can handle this one.
I'm the one with better press training, I suppose.
Let's sit back in the cut.
To be honest, we've been pretty, this is going to be a cop-out answer, but it's the honest to God truth. We consider ourselves sort of Switzerland in terms of Bachelor Nation gossip. And yeah. I don't even know what happened with Becca Kufrin. I just know that Thomas, because we love Thomas.
I mean, and Becca.
And we love Becca
I started
too.
Loving Thomas and then Becca came along.
Yeah, but we saw some stories. So I guess she was let go without any notice. And of course, she's pregnant, so that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
And then they brought in Serena and Joe. We had them on our podcast less than a month before that was announced, but they did not know. They did not know. And I believe them.
Yeah.
So I think it all kind of happened very, very haphazardly and quickly and last minute.
I think so as well. I mean, everything that I've heard, it has to do with Feist being ousted. Not only did they remove him, they tried to remove a swath of his loyalists in the producer tier. Some of
really?
Whom were double dutying the show and those podcasts. And so I think they were just eliminated. And then there was kind of an afterthought by Warner Brothers like, oh, yeah, what about those podcasts? And so then they had to scramble to be like, well, let's just put in Grocery Store Joe and Serena.
So I've heard a different story, but I cannot disclose it. I'm being you, Clues. I'm doing what you do.
All right.
I know something, but I can't tell you.
Yeah.
From what I understand, it wasn't as simple as that, but this is just hearsay. So I'm not going to pretend that it's fact.
Understood. Only Nick Viall was allowed to do those things. But as I understand it, though, also it had something to do with the Bachelor Live on Stage, which they had all set and ready in Arizona. It was going to be over the course of 3 weekends at this resort in Arizona. And Becca was going to host, obviously. And then that got canceled without any notification. Me and Lizzie were going to go to it. And we just got an email one day that was like, sorry, not happening.
Aww.
And that was it.
That sucks for Becca.
Yeah.
That sucks big time, especially since she's really good at her job.
I know. Well, we will have them on a love fest on our podcast. And we will get to the bottom of this.
Please.
Officially.
I personally am just curious about like how it all went down. Because there is this... Bachelor is obviously big enough that it has these peripheral kind of like business endeavors, the Bachelor Live on Stage thing being one of them. I consider myself lucky to have gone to one when they were doing it in the multiple cities the year prior out here in LA. And it was kind of like, it was a shit show. It definitely was not managed well. They didn't understand what they really had. Like, there's a version of it that's kind of a Bachelor Con huge thing where you have a bunch of different players from a bunch of different seasons past doing selfies with fans and all that. And none of that was there. You could see what this was meant to be, and it just was not. You know, it was like the 1% version of it.
Missed opportunity.
Totally missed opportunity. Still is. But it seems like they pared it down even further so that it was now just going to be at Arizona at this one hotel over the course of 3 weekends. And then my guess is they just didn't sell enough tickets to warrant doing it, and they pulled the plug.
Oof.
Ouch.
That's painful. Yeah, that's a real missed opportunity, because I really think there is interest in that if you do it right. And you should have, they should have fewer and make sure they have a lot of alums there.
Yeah, yeah, agree.
They should do one. In my opinion, you do it once over the course of a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You do it in Chicago at whatever, some kind of Chicago convention center, and it's a blowout. You have live podcast panels. You do happy hour on stage so people can come watch that being recorded. You have some area where you have somebody rewatching one of their old episodes. You could take pictures with everybody.
How have they not hired you yet?
Kissing booth.
Kissing.
Oh, how?
Yeah. But seriously, how have they not hired you yet?
Yeah, that I was just about to say, like, what are you doing still doing this podcast?
I think that they hate us because we've infiltrated the show in a clandestine manner with trained players over the past 3 seasons. And I think we've had a very, a very direct effect on what the show currently is. And I don't think they like that.
Wait, who are they?
I disagree with you. I think that they love all of it. I think every time there's a podcast talking about Bachelor Nation, they love it. I've lost that opinion that they ever, like, sometimes we'll say something, we're like, oh, it shouldn't go that hard on ABC. And I just think they're like, give me more. Just bring it. Yeah. More publicity. Don't care if you're dissing us or if you're complimenting us, criticizing the show. We like it.
I would agree with that if I didn't. I know people who have gotten cease and desist from them for things like using a rose.
I retract my previous statements.
Yeah. I just, like, I know the things that they'll come after you for, and it's like, what? Like, they have trademarked a rose, supposedly. And so,
but that's more legal. That's more property. That's like they're going after people who are taking their properties. I'm just talking about giving opinions.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you can't sue somebody for using a fucking rose. It's just a scare tactic, you know? But that person, like, didn't want to get involved, and it was like, fine, I'll just not use it. But I think that there is in the Bachelor universe, either via the producers or the legal team or whoever, I think there is an idea of, like, we control this. Anybody who's doing anything against it is a piece of shit. I mean, we know that in season 27, a player was caught reading our book in the mansion.
Huh. And
amazing.
That was erased from the cut, clearly. And I think it's like, you know, if they really were of the attitude, like, everything is fair play, this is great, it'll be great for the show, I think that would have been a great thing to cut into the show, because it would have been very crazy and dramatic. The fact that they have erased even the existence, basically, of this book that's a manual on how to play the game, to me means they still think they need to maintain control over the idea that it's not a game.
Well, they don't want to give... They
yeah,
don't
maybe
give
you did
you
go too far, now that I think about it.
Yeah, but they don't want to give it to you. It's like they like the idea of someone reading a manual, a sort of like no-name manual, but they don't want to give you the people that they want for their own podcasts.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm on the fence, but have you gotten any personal evidence that they don't like you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
You should have told me that before I started making the counter argument. Okay. Okay. So you're probably right.
I don't know if that's true anymore, though, because, you know, we saw very early on in the season, Charity put out an Instagram story that said you should listen to Game of Roses. And we were like, what?
Oh, wow.
That's very different from prior seasons, which also leads me back to the original thesis that I think because Mike Fleiss has been removed from this program, from this franchise, as have many of his loyalists in the producer tier, I think shit is changing. You're starting to see them open up with what players are capable of doing or what they allow them to do parasocially now, where before this season, it really feels like they just fucking strangled the life out of players. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only post this. You can only post this at this time. You can only go on these podcasts. I mean, Charity went on Off the Vine before her season came out to promote it. That has never happened.
Yeah,
usually that's
definitely
always through happy hour.
Mm. Yeah.
I just feel like the more podcasts that talk about this show, the better for ABC.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah,
I think
they may
feel that way.
They may not like you just because they're just, you suck. That was facetious. It's your black t-shirt. They only like the white V-necks.
Which I gotta switch it up.
Which, by the way, I've gotten criticism from some comments saying that I should switch to a black t-shirt if I want more subscribers. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, for what it's worth, I put on my best black t-shirt today for you guys.
Oh, the blackest is that, one.
Oh, that's the good one.
Yeah,
it's brand new.
It was fresh out of the pack.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
Hasn't faded yet with time.
Clues. Underwear drawers, they're not organized. They're like the Wild West, the final frontier of wardrobes. Mm. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. You got ones that are super old, different brands, etc. You don't know what to expect. But now I have felt the buttery soft comfort of Me Undies. And now I want to replace the whole drawer with Me Undies because those are my now go-to. I'm currently wearing their long sleeve shirt and my, which is not what this ad is about, but I am also wearing the super soft, sustainable modal fabric thong with no rollback waistband. You want that. You don't want it to be rolling. You don't want it to be showing. And I'm hooked. I don't want to wear anything else. It's all got to go now.
Well, this ad actually is kind of about that, Pace Case. Everybody knows MeUndies makes great underwear. It's in the name, MeUndies. But it's not just about underwear. You can explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and a whole bunch more. And their Move Me activewear collection is the softest activewear on the market. There's no doubt about it. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/roses. That's MeUndies.com/roses for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. If you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements. This is face, eye, body, shield, and it can all be used with any of their other products, which are free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the Skin Safe seal of approval.
You got to keep that skin glowing if you want to be keeping up the level of face play that I've got going on. And OneSkin was founded by an all-woman team of scientists. Their products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Their topical supplements are the easiest way to keep your skin healthy and hydrated without the harsh ingredients or irritation found in other skincare products often. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code ROSES at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code ROSES. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support Gore and tell them that we sent you.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in.
Known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, Canopy is dermatologist recommended. This unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free, installation's a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered shower head purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, Gore listeners can use our code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Well, I think that just to close that discussion, please. I believe that you are imagining it. I think they love you. Okay. Mm. And I think everybody loves you. Every time we hear Game of Roses come up, it's in love.
Agreed.
I've never, ever heard a single peep of criticism of your podcast or you.
Wow.
Or anybody involved with you.
Yeah.
So I think you're paranoid. I'd like to hear about this evidence, though.
You don't go deep enough into the comments at all.
Okay. I'll give it a shot.
No, I appreciate you saying that. I have no idea what the actual truth is at this point. Again, because the shakeup at the producer tier has been so drastic in the past, whatever, 6 to 8 months. For me personally, I feel like the show is drastically different this season in terms of their presentation of all the players, putting Charity on a pedestal like they used to with Leeds. It doesn't feel like they're going to come after her to me.
Yeah, but I don't think they were ever going to. I think in general, they're less likely to come after Bachelorette.
Yeah.
Like they seem to think that if they have a man who's white and kind of like your typical football jock, it's like they're going to just go for it.
Yeah, that's fair game.
Yeah.
That's how it seems to be. I'm not surprised that they have Charity on a pedestal. And I mean, she's doing a great job. So there's no,
she's fantastic as Bachelorette, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm going to just respectfully, like, slightly disagree, but it's with love.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes. Perfect.
I think the play out of Fleiss being gone is something that is going to take a couple of seasons to really see, personally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the tricks, I feel like in terms of what we're being shown, I feel like this could have been a year ago, 2 years ago. I don't really feel like it looks that different, personally. But I see your points.
Yeah. No, I hear you too. Obviously, whatever you're saying in it is valid. I thank you guys for joining me to talk about the state of the game. I just want to ask one more question at the end here that has nothing to do with Bachelor, or maybe everything to do with Bachelor, depending on how you look at it. What do you guys think of the fact that we now know the United States government is in possession of alien corpses?
Wait, so I did not know this.
I'm
getting the news from Game of Roses. I really thought
I'm breaking the news.
That what, you know, as a kid, when I finally heard about this, it would not be from a Bachelor podcast, but all, you know, still good, still exciting.
I think the second we hop off, we're going to be Googling this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. But I know you're a UFO enthusiast, yes. To say the least, right? Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. Okay. Fair.
Okay. Fair assessment. What is the level on a 1 to 10 to completely take yourself out of Chad? Now you're just a regular citizen, no real opinion on UFOs either way. On a scale of 1 to 10, how credible is this? Is this dead alien body evidence?
I'm going to go with 9. We haven't seen the pictures, but the guy yesterday, basically what happened was an open congressional hearing with these 3 whistleblowers. And a lot of what's happening now, like Chuck Schumer just added a piece to this bill that they just signed that makes it legally okay for any whistleblower in any area of government to come out and talk about UFOs without any kind of legal or career style repercussions. So what happened yesterday was these 3 guys, who one is a Navy pilot, one is a Navy commander, some higher rank type guy, and one is this guy, David Grush, who worked for the UAP division of, I believe, the DOD for the past however many years. And his job was basically to take firsthand accounts from people who have high levels of clearance and who have seen shit in the U.S. military, in the Pentagon, to take their firsthand accounts and like determine if they're credible or not. And he's heard however many testimonies, hundreds or whatever. And so he essentially said during this open hearing yesterday that the United States military has recovered crashed UFOs that contain what he called, in quotes, non-human biologics.
Could that be like animals that we know about on Earth? Biologics?
No. He said that they were determined by experts to be nothing that has come from Earth.
Okay, so this is interesting, because we had this discussion actually recently with someone who asked us the same question, not on a podcast.
It was an anniversary Q&A.
Oh, that was that? The,
yeah.
So I don't believe that any alien civilization could get here Okay. I mean, theoretically,
yeah, but you haven't seen the evidence.
No. I'm not disagreeing with you here. I just want to make preface this. This is not me taking the other side at all. What I'm saying is I do not believe within, you know, 99.9999% certainty personally that it is possible for any civilization to arrive here because it's too far. And unless they were able to warp space-time, and if they were able to get to that level of, you know, technological evolution, they would probably destroy themselves at that point. So I just don't think it's, I don't think it's scientifically possible. But what I do think is very possible, and I didn't consider this enough during my whole pessimistic UFO phase, is that it's very possible that said alien civilization was flying around in their little star, some, you know, 50, 60, 100 light years away, and they ran into some problems. And that spaceship then drifted into interplanetary or interstellar space and then just landed here, not on purpose or by design, but just because gravity and whatever the whims of the universe brought it here. And I actually think that that is not fully realistic, but much more realistic possibility than them deciding to come here. And with that, new knowledge that I've decided that I have, I believe that it is very possible that a dead alien could have been found on this planet. I think it could happen.
Interesting.
Do you, any
take on this?
I tend to defer to Andy on these things.
Yeah. On alien matters of alien life form.
Yeah, matters of alien life. You know, Andy's really increased my sense of wonder about the universe in general. It's not something I really grew up thinking about.
Yeah.
And so it's all just sort of, I'm just sort of watching him talk and enjoying.
Yeah. Well, do you have a rebuttal to that, Mr. Chad?
Yeah, I basically think that no religion, no government, no scientific agency on our planet knows even 1% of what reality is. I think this is all an illusion, and we're doing our best to like make sense of it. That said, do I think there are other sentient life forms out there in the universe that are technologically far superior to us, who understand reality fundamentally at a higher level? Yes, of course. And I think the bottom line is this: why are these aliens coming here? They've been doing it since the 40s, if we're to believe all of the other stuff that has happened in terms of like basically everything that started since the Roswell crash. If they've been coming here, why? And the only ideas that make sense to me are, one, they are kind of like military scouting missions to find something, but I don't think that they're hostile or they would have done something bad by now. I also don't think they're here to help us or they would have done that by now. So then it leads me to believe like, well, then it's probably not military. What if, and this is possible, I don't think it's probable, but it's possible. What if UFOs on some alien world are as kind of easy to get your hands on as a car? And these are just like families out on vacations that get a fucking flat tire, you know, shit like that. Like, I think that's possible. You know what I mean?
No, I'm not going to let you get away with that. No. Okay. That's absurd. But what I do, I mean, that's funny. I like it. I hope that's true. I hope you're right.
Me too.
But I will say in closing that if a civilization developed the technology of intergalactic or, you know, at least interstellar travel, which is just mind-bendingly far away from us, like we're not even 10,000 years from discovering how to do that. Maybe, okay, fine. Maybe a thousand. They wouldn't crash. You wouldn't have a dead alien. You'd never find an alien, but they would never crash. There's no way you could develop interstellar travel and then be like, we ran out of gas, or miscalculation. I just can't believe that. That's where the practicality of it runs out for me, personally.
I don't know how far down this rabbit hole you want to go, but there are now... There are multiple accounts of people, like high-ranking officials in other governments, like the dude who basically was the head of the Israeli NASA for decades, is on tape saying that there are aliens, there are multiple species and civilizations, and multiple governments around our world are working with them. If that's the case, then it could be a matter of like these are test pilots that are like bringing new technology to whatever government to work with. I mean, there are a million scenarios where it makes sense to me that a UFO would crash here or in some way wind up here and not be able to control itself. Like, what if that was some kind of new technology for that specific alien species and it just didn't do well with our atmosphere? And once they got here, it was like, shit, that fucked up. We've certainly launched shit into space that blows up. You know, it's not like their technology is going to be perfect, because no technology is. I think that will be the case for all time.
I leave room for that. But why such a secret? Why is it to be such a secret?
Control. Government's sole function is to control the populace.
But everything's been leaked. Everything that's been a secret's been leaked. There's no secrets left.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this one has. There is supposedly, I mean, this is kind of what is coming now. And what we were talking about before we started recording is I think it's at a place where there's one step left. We've been inching up to this since 2015 was the first New York Times article that had the video in it that the guy from Blink-182 got his hands on, that was like, here's a UFO. And in that New York Times article, then ex-Senator Harry Reid said, yes, we have UFOs in hangars. I personally funded black ops sites that are researching them. Those videos came out. The Pentagon, the Navy both said, yes, these are real videos of actual UFOs. Since 2015, about every 3 to 6 months, some new fucking thing comes out. You had, after those articles came out, roughly 6 months later, that December, you had a closed session hearing with a bunch of different senators. Eric Swalwell was in there. Chuck Grassley was in there. And it was a closed session hearing where they had all the heads of the Navy and the DOD come in and basically brief them on what they knew about UFOs. Within 6 weeks, Space Force is unanimously funded across party lines. Both Republican and Democratic senators were like, yes, $1.3 trillion Space Force. Let's do that now. And everybody puts that on Trump and is like, Trump's dumb Space Force. It's like, Trump didn't fucking do that. The Senate did. Hmm. And they did it after this weird hearing where something scared the living shit out of them. And then every 6 months, we're getting new UFO information. It's getting closer and closer to being like, here's a video of it. And I think that's the only next step. You got a fucking guy in Congress saying we have alien bodies. You got to show them to us now. That's the only next step.
I mean, there is nothing I want more than for you to be right about all of this. There's nothing. Literally, I take over everything. Shorten my life by 10 years. Give me 10 years less life. Show me the aliens. Yeah. I'll take it.
No, I agree. I think that that's what it's required now for people to get on board with this, is to actually see the whatever we're going to have, video footage or whatever, or actual craft showing up above everybody's house. I don't know. I just know that it's like a strange, exciting time. And when I was a kid, this was like the revelation of UFOs was like the biggest thing in the world. I thought it would never happen in my lifetime. Now it's kind of happening in this weird piecemeal, inch by inch way, and nobody seems to give a shit. And I'm just like, this is fucking crazy. This dude in Congress just said there's alien bodies.
Yeah.
And we've got them.
Oh, I mean, look, of all the people who've tried to convince me of this my whole life, I've gotten as close to the finish line
as possible
with this Bachelor podcast, gentlemen.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a high compliment. Thank you very much.
No, it is.
Yeah, it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, you have such conviction, and you're a very bright guy, and you have a lovely velvety voice.
Thank you.
And
Thank you
could so convince much. Me of a lot of things.
Well, I'll continue to try to do that anytime. Thank you so much for being on Game of Roses and talking about the state of Bachelor Nation and about UFOs. My apologies to anybody who just wanted straight Bachelor talk and no UFO talk, but yesterday was a big day, and so it had to be done.
Okay. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, this was
great.
We
always love coming on.
Always a pleasure. We love you.
Thank you so much to Fimp Rose recipient and superstar player Charlene Joy and her husband, Andy Levine, the two co-hosts of Dear Shandy, for joining me for that State of the Game. Always great to talk to them. They always have such incredible insights about not only the Bachelor franchise, but the world generally. So please go check out their podcast, Dear Shandy, if you haven't done so. And now it is time to enter that portion of our program in which I talk about all of the movements of the various numbers of our favorite players from our beloved game. This is
This Week in
Games.
Back in its regular time slot at 8-7 Central, The Bachelorette did the impossible this week, scoring a 0.46 in the demo, which is a 21% gain from last week, with 2.6 million raw viewers, also up about 21% from last week. Both of these are the biggest numbers the show has produced this season, which to my knowledge, at least in recent memory, we have not seen. We have not seen a season of Bachelor or Bachelorette tick up this high in the numbers halfway through the middle of the season, or at least in the basically the penultimate episode before playoffs begin. Charity Lawson utterly dominated the field this week, crushing a new episode of American Ninja Warrior on NBC that got a 0.3, a rerun of The Neighborhood on CBS that got a 0.2, and a new episode of the what is essentially a dead-on-arrival TV show called Stars on Mars on Fox that managed to limp into the ratings board with a 0.1 and sub 1 million total raw viewers. They had 840K viewers tuning in on Fox. So you're getting more eyeballs on most of the Big Bachelor players' Instagram stories than you are on that TV show. So it seems like the move back to the original time slot has paid off. As we're seeing, also one of the best seasons of The Bachelorette in recent memory. It's just starting to crush the competition now. I'm so glad they moved it back to this original time slot and gave it the place in the ABC schedule that it deserves. Now let's move on to some of those gains. This week, Charity the Crown gained 6K for a total of 143K Instagram followers and 3.3K for a total of 20.8K TikTok followers. In the player pool, we see the eyeball player Joey Graziadei gained 9.1K. He's now at a total of 37.4K. Tanner Cortad is in that second spot for his swan song. He gained 6.3K and now has a total of 15.6K. We see Doughton gaining 6K this week for a total of 13.5K, and PhD PTC player Xavier Bonner gained 3.2K for a total of 9.5K. And in that fifth and final spot, we got John Baresh gaining 1.8K for a total of 14.6K, despite not being in the program whatsoever. And the top five Instagram chart overall is as follows. In the top spot, Joey Graziadei has that 37.4K marker next to his name. We got Tanner Cortad in second place with 15.6K. John Baresh is in third with 14.6. And fourth place is Doughton with 13.5K. And in fifth place, we still got the PP of the season. Even though he hasn't been in the game since night one, he's still in fifth place on the overall Instagram chart with 13.5K followers. This is just astounding to me. These numbers are dismal. I don't know how it can get worse than this. So we have to assume we've hit rock bottom here. And now the parasocial work to be done by incoming players of following seasons is very clear. We need to get these numbers up. But let's take a look at the TikTok chart as well, because that is interesting. Also, first place, Christopher Spell. He was the professional jumper night one guy, 174K. Second place, PP, 30.7K, night one guy. Third place, Caleb Ballgard, 21.6K. He was eliminated last week. Fourth place, Khalid Hassan, 6.6K. And fifth place is Sean McLaughlin, rounding out that top five with 1.3K followers. So maybe he upped his game for his swan song, his knock knock, what is effectively being marched to your execution. It's almost, in my opinion, a self-elimination, but not quite. So we see these numbers, and these numbers are very bad across the board. There's no sugarcoating it. There is no other way to say it. I don't know what can be done to change this other than the culture of the show taking some responsibility and putting the message out there in the fan base within the fourth audience saying, Instagram is not bad. Social media is not bad. You can follow these people. It's okay to talk about these things on the show. I truly believe that that is something to do with why these numbers are so low. But nonetheless, those are the gains for this week. Let's move on to all those tids.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
secrets that we all want to hear about.
This is Bachelor Nation News.
Up first in Bachelor Nation News. We're heading to Real Housewives country. Amidst ongoing strikes by the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild, superstar Real Housewives and New York player Bethany Frankel took to TikTok this week for a series of direct address videos proposing something we have long thought possible and necessary here at Game of Roses, a reality performers union. Bethany's caption stated, quote, "This is a union. I've defined fair and reasonable terms and consider those making $0 on The Bachelor to a housewife making millions. This is a first pass and how I'd negotiate with my institutional knowledge and wisdom in this industry with over a decade on 8 TV shows with 10 books, 5 podcasts, multiple businesses, and what was the fastest growing spirits business in history. I know a contract." In addition to outlining her own unfair compensation for her time in the Real Housewives franchise, Frankel issued a 10-point list of suggestions for what could be the basis of a reality performers union contract. Among the points were guaranteed minimums of $5,000 per episode for on-air talent, a 10% raise and subsequent seasonal appearances, a form of residuals being implemented, and protection for reality performers' social media businesses, among other things. Frankel also claims to have support from other high-ranking members of the reality TV community, and she claims to be in conversations with people who can help her make this reality TV union become a reality. These posts that she was making blew my mind. This is exactly what is needed. It's got to be somebody that is this high profile who has the ability to actually get things moved through and done. She is the person who could do this. She seems motivated to do this. She seems very serious about all the things she's saying. I, quite frankly, hope this happens very quickly because I think it will redefine what reality television even is. It will enforce some kind of fair treatment for reality TV performers, which we have not seen since the dawn of reality TV. We have talked at length on Game of Roses about the contract that all the players have to sign to go into The Bachelor, forfeiting literally their civil rights. I don't think that clause is going to be allowed in a contract anymore. I think Frankenbites could be a thing that could go the way of the dodo. I think there's a lot of things that will be changed fundamentally about how reality TV is made and presented if this reality TV performers union can become reality. So good luck to Bethany Frankel. And even if it never happens, just the posts that she made this week, I think are historically important. If you haven't checked them out, they're all over her social media and you should do so. Up next in Bachelor Nation News, Bachelor Season 11 ring winner Sean Booth revealed the identity of his incoming child's mother this week. She is a photographer named Audrey Joseph. Joseph appeared on the Monday, July 24th episode of In the Booth with Sean Booth, where she explained that she's originally from outside Austin, Texas, and has been a Nashville slider for 7 years. Booth and Joseph met 5 years ago when he hired her as a photographer to take pictures at his gym. The pair noted that they have names picked out for either a boy or a girl, and Joseph clarified Booth's previous claims about how they were going to, in quotes, incorporate both of their last names when the baby is born, saying, "My name is going to be a version of the middle name of both of them, but it's not a hyphenated last name. So technically, when they introduce themselves, they're going to say, 'Hi, I am blank Booth.'" Neither of them went into details about the nature of their relationship, with Booth referring to Joseph as his baby mama when he ended the podcast. So congrats to Sean Booth again. And I guess time will tell what is the nature of this relationship, if they're just going to be co-parenting style friends or if there is maybe some kind of romantic inclination brewing back up for them. In other Bachelor Nation baby news, Raven Gates and Adam Gottschalk welcomed their second child into our dying world. The Bachelor Nation couple shared their newborn's name via social media on Tuesday with a series of photos and videos posted to Raven's main grid with a caption that read, "We welcome our second son on my 32nd birthday, July 23rd, 2023, heart emoji. Max Asa Gottschalk weighed 8 pounds and 1 ounce, 20 inches long, and was born at 8:10 a.m. My prayer for my sons have been that they have an unbreakable bond and each having their own separate God-given gifts to give to the world. If the last few days are any indication of what the future holds, then my prayers have already been answered. Heart emoji. Not pictured is Boaz getting his sniffs in. Dog emoji." Congrats to these two powerhouse players on expanding their family. And finally, in Bachelor Nation news, The Great One is making waves by airing completely unsubstantiated rumors about the incoming inaugural Golden Bachelor, Gary Turner. Earlier this week on the Vial Files, Vial indulged a story from one of his producers about a DM she received regarding Gary Turner that contained accusations of infidelity to his wife shortly before her passing, as well as a termination from his job as a result of an inappropriate voicemail that he inadvertently sent to the entire company. Despite none of this information being verified in the slightest, Vial went on to pontificate about the nature of the infidelity, even while clearly stating it wasn't proven at all. Reality Steve was quick to offer a rebuttal on his own podcast, reminding us all that Vial himself has continually attacked Reality Steve for releasing private information about him and other players, which is essentially exactly what he's doing to the Golden Bachelor now. We at Gore want to remind everyone listening that none of these rumors about the incoming Golden Bachelor have been verified at all. Even if they are true, so far, they are not verified. As we continue to move into an era that sees the community of podcasters and commentators growing on what seems like a daily basis, we like to think that it is forcing the journalistic bar to be raised, that there is some accountability for this, that you will do some amount of vetting, that there are standards to be maintained where reporting on these players' time in game as well as their lives outside of it is concerned. Although Vial has never positioned himself as a journalist, only a therapist, of course, we all know, who is slow to judge other people, we at Gore encourage him to issue a retraction of this reporting or at the very least vet the source before reporting anything like this again. Now, he's taking a lot of flack. There have been a bunch of people who are very mad at this. There's a great Dave Neal video you can check out on his YouTube channel where he really breaks it down. And he goes all the way back to the first appearance of Reality Steve on the Vial Files, because Reality Steve is now coming at Vial for this. And it just seems very sloppy to me. Now, that said, it's all over the Bachelor news world. Everyone is talking about what Vial is saying about the Golden Bachelor. Even though we all kind of know it's probably not true, that there's no way that they could vet this or find any kind of corroborative information. So is it a bad move on Vial's part? I can't say. It's shitty. It's definitely a shitty thing to put out there. But people are now talking about it, and Vial is once again in headlines, which seems to be his kind of special skill. But nonetheless, that is all the news that is fit to print this week. Now we're going to move on to that portion of our program in which I'm going to discuss the top four plays that our favorite players are making off the field and on their telephonic devices. This is
the Parasocial play of the week.
Sean McLaughlin posted his swan song to Instagram this week in a multi-slide trip down memory lane, and some of his more memorable moments were included in the slideshow, including his two-on-one and his shirtless Ken group date performance, along with a novel-length caption thanking everyone involved for the experience. This post raked in 1,790 likes and 91 comments. Tanner Cortad joined the swan song post frenzy as well, using some humor that we were never treated to in his edit, by a two-slide main grid offering featuring images from his two-on-one date, but with Sean conveniently cropped out of each image, along with a caption that read, "Best one-on-one date ever." The clever reminder to us all that this man was actually on the show generated 7,942 likes and 399 comments. We also saw Charity and her brother this week making a TikTok after Brayden's elimination. And in this TikTok, they are featured side by side in a car as Charity lip syncs to audio that has her saying, "He's a clown. Why didn't I see it before?" The Brayden clown reveal TikTok has 55K likes and 541.1K views. These are all fantastic parasocial plays. However, there can be only one winner. And this week's Parasocial Play of the Week goes to FacePlay superstar and member of the Glaze family, Justin Glaze. Justin Glaze teased the fourth audience this week about Susie Evans and Andrew Spencer's possible romantic relationship. In a TikTok that has choreography, cinematography, acting, and editing, this high production value work of cinematic art has 39.3K likes and 571.5K views, and it continues to prove to us all that the Glaze family understands every element of this game on a level that most can only dream of. I was blown away by this
video. It's super funny. It has great shots of Justin pondering out the window, kind of almost lamenting that he's not the one that Susie Evans is potentially dating. And it looks like she's to be made to be dating Andrew Spencer in this. We don't know if any of them are actually dating, but they are capitalizing on the rumor mill. And this is exactly what you got to be doing in the parasocial world. Now, let's move on to talking about some of those non-human parasocial players. This week, Lauren Leyendyke and Alessi mocked a bunch of cows in a very cute video. And there was one other play, though, that had to take the cake. A hound capitalized on some of the biggest news in Bachelor Nation this week to take the trophy. Sean Booth's dog, Walter, joined Booth and Dre Joseph in their pregnancy photo shoot post this week to steal the spotlight, at least until the Booth-Joseph baby player arrives into the parasocial arena later this year. Congratulations to Sean Booth and to Walter on winning the Parasocial Creature of the Week. And now it is time to move on to that portion of our program in which I descend deep into the pit to issue forth my scream and also to listen to a scream from one of our listeners. This is
Screams from the Pit.
This week, I alluded to my scream up top in the State of the Game with Charlene and Andy. And indeed, I found myself this week at some point under the influence of certain medicinal herbs. And I was scrolling through my Instagram. I came to Demi Burnett's Instagram. And it's beautifully curated. I do think that she has one of the most interesting Instagrams of a past player from recent times of anyone that I've seen. It's kind of a hodgepodge of, I wouldn't even say a hodgepodge. It's almost entirely pink. Everything on the Instagram, every slide, every post, every video, there's a lot of pink in it. But it is a mix of Spawn Con for various hair care products and beautification products, et cetera, clothing. Some kind of autism awareness posts every once in a while, and just kind of funny random things. But I became very curious as I was scrolling through it as to what Demi's first post is. At least her first, I don't know what her first actual post was that she made prior to being on The Bachelor or anything like this. But in terms of what a player is presenting parasocially, what is their identity on social media and in the parasocial world, I started to become fixated on the idea that like that first post is important because it really is how the player sees themselves. And for some people, their Instagrams have never been scrubbed. It's just a collection of photos that they have started posting since they opened their Instagram account to give you snapshots into their lives of places they've been, people they've met, foods they've eaten, et cetera, et cetera. But for other players, especially high-level professional players like Demi Burnett, who is, at this point, a professional influencer. She does nothing else. That's her job. She makes some appearances on TV shows and stuff here and there. She's tried to launch a couple of podcasts, but I think primarily her income is coming from SpawnCon. So I became fascinated with the question of, well, then what is that persona? What is she presenting in her Instagram? How does she view her own parasocial identity? And so I scrolled back. She has 923K followers. She has 713 posts. I scrolled back to the very beginning of them. And her first post, again, very curious about what it was. Was it going to be something from prior to Bachelor or not? The answer is no. Her first post is her official Bachelor headshot, the photo that all players take and that they put out when they reveal the players. That is her first post. To me, and again, the scream here is that I went this deep and thought this hard about this and will continue to do so, by the way, for every fucking player in our goddamn beloved game. And I may have to make some, I'm thinking about doing potentially a Clues Corner where I just look at high-level players' Instagrams and scroll all the way back to their first post to see what it is. Because in a way, especially for a player like Demi, who has clearly scrubbed everything prior to that, it represents psychologically a kind of birth. It's that the Instagram profile, the parasocial profile, is a version of who she really is that started at The Bachelor. The identity that she conveys in her Instagram was given birth to by The Bachelor. Nothing for her parasocially exists before her time in game. I found that absolutely fascinating. It may be a minutia alarm, but it has opened up for me a new realm of recreational behaviors and activities, which are going to be me scrolling through people's Instagrams all the way back to their first post just to see what it is. Again, because I'm like, Sean Lowe was one that I looked at as well. He has a lot more posts and I don't think any of them are scrubbed. So for him, his parasocial identity clearly didn't start with The Bachelor. It started much before that. But anyway, I'm very curious and we'll probably be looking into these other Instagram accounts, like I said, in the near future. And if I can figure out how to do it and it doesn't take too much time and everything, I might throw that up on Patreon, the next one that I scroll through. So be on the lookout for that. But now let's move on to listen to a scream that comes to us from somebody deep down in the pit. If you would like to submit your screams to this show to be played right here on This Week in Bachelor Nation, you just go to patreon.com/gameofroses. You join us in the bottom of the pit. You get access to the Game of Roses Discord, which is a thriving and flourishing community of all pit members in there talking about all kinds of shit. And one of the things you can do in there is submit your screams in a 1 minute or under audio format, and we play the best ones here. The one we are about to play right now comes to us from someone named Reiki, I believe, and let's take a listen.
Hey, Pitt. I recently re-entered the dating pool as a 40-year-old package deal. I've been trying out the dating apps and have been open to meeting pretty much anyone. For whatever reason, I've always dated men 5'8 and under, which was no problem as I'm 5'4. Recently, though, I've met up with two men over 6 feet tall. On both of these dates, the men were able to pick me up into an impromptu hooju. Now, I understand without proper approach, these would have scored very poorly, but I did achieve ankle lock and, in one case, even rain down kisses. Unfortunately, now I'm addicted to the subsport and see it as a necessity. I've adjusted my filters to only include men over 6 feet tall. Any tips for training myself into hooju glory would be greatly appreciated. Praise be, Dark Lord Palmer.
All I can say is thank you for your service. The subsport thanks you and I thank you. This is one of the most beautiful screams I've ever heard in my life. Congratulations on getting bitten by the hooju bug. I hope that the hooju venom stays pumping through your veins and you continue to do them for all of your days. If I had any advice, which is what I was asked for here, about how to better your hooju game, I think you're doing it. I mean, this is the practice that I recommend to any players I coach. You have to find someone who is 6 feet or taller, because all bachelors are, with few exceptions, and those are past bachelors. In current game, they're only going to be 6 feet and taller. You just need to find somebody who will allow you to do this. Now, I don't know when these dates were taking place. Are these first dates that you're just hoojuing people on? Are the guys pulling you into hoojus on first dates? If so, fantastic. I also am curious about how those dates wound up. Did you then have conversations about hoojus with these people? Did you have to explain what a hooju is? Do they already know? I have so many more questions based on this scream, but this is a fantastic scream. Again, congratulations on accepting the hooju, bringing it into a part of your life in such a way. And good luck out there in the dating pool. Sounds like things are going well, though. Sounds like you don't need it. You got guys hoojuing you left and right. Absolutely fantastic. But thanks again for the scream. And again, if anybody out there wants to submit their scream, you just go to patreon.com/gameofroses. Join us in the pit. Fire off that 1 minute or under audio clip and we'll play the best ones here. But that does it. That wraps up This Week in Bachelor Nation. Thanks again to Charlene Joint and Andy Levine for joining me in State of the Game. And for anyone out there who might have listened to that State of the Game about the part about the aliens, and you haven't yet seen the footage from the open congressional hearing that happened Wednesday, just Google it. It's worth your time. I promise you. And before I go, I must ask myself the question, what is that dwab at? It has been 7,794 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be the non-human biologics.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us and then